Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down.
Who's, man?
Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys are getting your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's honor. It's time to put down the babies. Put down the pepperoni.
Let's go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Game time.
Well, welcome to another Blog Talk Radio show. I'm your host, M.H. Scott, and as always, I want to promise you another wonderful show. This is our first time back on the air, and probably 3 or 4 months ago when we finally went off. But we're back, and I think we're going to be on for a good little while now, folks, because we have some things that need to be addressed, and definitely have some things that we need to talk about as parents of student athletes. What is the Parents Coaching Parents Network? Parents Coaching Parents Network is a network of parents around the country, around the U.S., that's there to support you as you help your child pursue his or her endeavors as securing the athletic scholarship. But not only focusing on scholarship, we're focusing on quite a few other things, such as helping your child avoid any NCAA violation, helping your child stay out of trouble during the time that they're just getting into school, helping your child make that adjustment to the college life. And even before that time period, you know, just that transition from middle school to high school. But I definitely will be remiss if I didn't go out there and give a shout-out to my man, Mr. Keith Wright. Put a little piece together for us some time ago, probably roughly about 4 or 5 years ago. And we've been sharing that piece with us on Blog Talk Radio ever since then. So let's see if we can get Keith up on the air and share that information with us. Here we go.
Student of the game, had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hate then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Hello?
Mike Scott. Hey.
Yes, sir. Good to hear you today.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm just, just came from taking my son to get some shots up, you know, and.
Okay.
Yeah, I told him he needed to be like Mike Scott, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Now, he didn't know who Mike Scott was for the other day. Now he knows definitely who Mike Scott is.
Okay. All right. That's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing.
That's right.
Yeah,
so
what's going on with the National Sports Authority?
Well, we're talking to the National Football League tomorrow. And the Players Association, we've talked to the NBA, and we sent them something, and we've got to follow back up with them. But we are moving forward with all deliberate speed with our business of success beyond sports, or BOSS, Our camp is going to be at the historic Challengers Boys and Girls Club in Los Angeles, affectionately referred to as the Oasis in the middle of South Central. They produced two of their brightest stars, Russell Westbrook and James Harden. They come out of the Challengers Boys and Girls Club. And then both of them will be involved in some form, because I met with the guy who runs the club. His dad actually started it back in 1968, and he took over for his dad when he passed. And he's been running it, I think, for about the last 15 years or so. It's probably the biggest Boys and Girls Club in the whole system. I mean, they got indoor-outdoor court. They got tennis courts. They got four tennis courts. They got a tennis court with a stadium kind of thing, you know, with seating. They got a football field. They got about a 50-yard turf. They got classrooms. It's like a turnkey. We don't have to go. And they even got some kids who are going to participate. Some kids who already go to the Boys and Girls Club regular, like some young Russell Westbrooks and James Hardens. And so we're gonna change the trajectory of the lives of some eighth graders. We're going to stay with them from eighth grade till they graduate college. And then next year we will pick up another group of eighth graders, and then we'll have eighth grader and ninth graders. And then we're going to bring it to Atlanta. We're going to have the Mike Scott boss in Atlanta, and then we take those kids, and no matter where he go, it's still going to be the Mike Scott. So if he stay in Atlanta or if he go someplace else, in 5 years we're going to have, you know, kids in college and in every grade, and from eighth grade up, we'll have multiple classes, and we're going to take the stranglehold they got off our kids.
Now, when you talk about that stranglehold, give our listening audience a little insight of what you mean by that stranglehold.
So I'm talking to your audience, okay. I thought it was just me and you. Well, the stranglehold is that AAU and some of the coaches are just as bad as AAU. I mean, for example, we called some coaches here, and I ain't ashamed, you know me, to call names. But Crenshaw and Dorsey, right? I mean, they're, you know, prolific high schools that produce a bunch of athletes, most of them have failed, right? And because all they want to work on is their game. They don't want to work on themselves. And what happens as soon as the kid, you know, shows some talent, then somebody is going to act like they like the kid and like his family. But really, they just want to get close to the kid, and if you're not careful, they will come between the kid and the family. They will become the source of information for the kid as opposed to the parents. And after that, it's a wrap. I mean, you can go to the games, and you can carry his bag, and you can buy him food and stuff. But these other people, he's going to be listening to them. And we see it every day. I mean, it didn't get to the point now where the AAU coaches, they all got relationships with, you know, schools and with coaches at the college level. And so you never really know whose interests they're looking out for when they're introducing your kids to coaches or they're recommending schools. And what we want to do as part of BOSS, because we will have a component for the parents as well, and you and I have talked about rolling what you do into what we do and do it together, and so we're going to empower the parents so the parents can stay parents to the kids, so they can stay the source of information for their children. That's mom, parents, and dad parents, you know, whether they're, you know, mom or dad. So we're going to take that stranglehold, and we're going to produce whole young men who will be positioned and prepared to live lives of purpose and the ones who rise to the top and make it to the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever, they it's going to be a different kind of guy. It's going to be a different kind of guy. It's not going to be the kind of guy who doesn't know who John Rogers of Aerial Capital Management is. Ain't going to be. They're going to all know John Rogers before they get out of middle school. And John Rogers, for the listeners, is one of the baddest brothers on Wall Street ever out of Chicago. And his company, Aerial Capital Management, ought to be handling the money for all of these brothers. But the brothers ain't never heard of Aerial Capital Management, and the guys, you know, from CAA and Octagon and, you know, Relativity and all them places, they ain't taking them to John Rogers because they don't want them to meet John Rogers. John Rogers' ex-wife, by the way, is the young lady, I forget her name, but she's chief of staff for Barack Obama. And then his partner, Melanie Hobson, you can find her most days on NBC giving money tips to the whole world. But they don't know. I mean, most folks just think, you know, I mean, she's just like a newscaster or something. She's given, but she's the vice president of Aerial Capital Management. It's going to be a whole different guy. I mean, these guys going they will know who they are, whose they are, and they're not going to, what we call it, fried ice cream. They're not going to be buying the fried ice cream like they've been buying it. In fact, we just had a kid, check this out, Mike, and to the listeners, he just represented himself in the NFL draft. He went around, we went on visits to teams, and he went to the East-West Shrine game, and they kept asking him who's representing him. And he said, I'm representing myself.
Okay.
We just acted as counselors for him, right? And guess what happened? Every team he told he was representing himself, as soon as they got off the phone, whoever he was talking to from that team called his agent friends. And the next call Chandler got was from some agent saying, you know, I heard you ain't got nobody. And he said, that's right, I don't need nobody neither. And he just went through the whole process himself. I mean, he scheduled his own trips. You know, he took all the emails. He took all the phone calls. He even took the calls yesterday. And we just walked him through this whole process. And believe me, this man right now, he ain't played a down in the NFL, but he is light years ahead of his contemporaries because he know that them people up in the front office, they just human beings, right? They not, you know, they first of all, they gave him a different level of respect when he told them he was representing himself. They said, oh, wow, man, that's great. But again, soon as they hung up, though, they called one of their agent friends to put him on him, right? And he just took the call, and he was kind, and he just said, look, I got it handled, man. I don't really need no agent. So he just went through the whole process. And so he's going to be a disciple to go tell the next group of guys because, I mean, these agents is just getting paid in the NFL. If you drafted after the second round, you're going to get the same contract as a free agent. The only thing that will be different is your signing bonus. And even in the NBA, they got the salaries in the back of the collective bargaining agreement for the first round. And, I mean, that's 95% of the money. I think you got a little bit of wiggle room, but not enough to give somebody, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. That's like Christmas for these guys. You know, but we had the pleasure of just catching you on
MSNBC here recently, and noticed that you had a little conversation about the recent issue on Mr. Sterling. You want to share a little bit of that with us?
Yeah, I was actually on Tamron Hall's show, News Nation, last Wednesday, And then on Sunday morning on Weekends with Alex Witt, and in both cases we talked about the intersection between race and sports and money, because that's where we are right now, and we just had a crash at the intersection, and Donald Sterling just crashed at the intersection of race and sports and money. But Donald Sterling is not the issue. He's just a symptom of the problem. The problem is a system that doesn't value our young men other than as athletes, tries to push them all into athletics, and cripples them in the process, both in terms of interpersonal relationships, especially with women, the opposite sex. And I was so disappointed, man. I don't know who's on the phone. But, man, can you imagine what NFL going to have? Two guys kissing yesterday. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. That was going to be one of my topics here in a minute, too, because that caught me off guard.
Hey, man.
That caught me off guard.
And see, the imagery of black men doing that, they love this stuff. They put that stuff on TV for a purpose. And it ain't because they weren't trying to promote gay rights. They emasculating the black man. I mean, they got guys dressing like women now. All over Facebook, I see it in guys. You know, it's just crazy. And now they get, I mean, it's, but we were talking about this intersection of race and sports and money. And that's, we've been at the intersection for some time. Black folk just didn't know we was at the intersection. And we just had a bunch of crashes. And every time we crash, we lose. Because all our children are doing the playing, you know, and stocking the rosters and then consuming everything that's not nailed down and not being encouraged or supported to really make the kind of difference. You know, they've got scripture, right? To whom much is given, much is expected. So these guys have been given a lot. And I'm not literally haven't been given it because they've worked hard and they've earned it. But without the favor of God, none of them would be successful. And so they got a moral obligation. But every place they turn, people discourage them from helping their own. But, white folk make it, they help other white folk. Asians make it, they help other Asians. Hispanics make it, they help other Hispanics. I mean, that's just, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not racist, you know, because you don't have to hate other people because you help your own people. I don't hate white people. I don't hate Asians. I don't hate Hispanics. I just love black people. I mean, I love white people, too.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
We so often come to that thought process that, you know, just because we talk about loving our brothers and you know, talk about positive things in our community, that there's something wrong with it. I think that's a condition that we have fell into.
They have purposely trained us to think, that's right, that somehow it's racist if we try to help each other. But that's all they do is help each other, every race. I mean, go get some Chinese food, see how many black folk you see working in there. I mean, and I'm not trying to say they don't like black people. They just hire Chinese people. Asian, I mean, it's just what they do. I mean, but we think if we do it somehow, because we want to be accepted. Our thing is to be accepted. Ever since integration, we've been fighting to be accepted by people who think like Donald Sterling. They will never accept us, even when we get as much money as they have. I mean, they don't. He said, don't be bringing Magic Johnson. He just said, no, anybody. He said, Magic Johnson is a multimillionaire.
Exactly.
It don't make no difference. He's still a black man. And he said don't bring no black man. He ain't make no distinction between whether he got some money or not. But we've been fighting tooth and nail to be accepted by people. Because Donald Sterling is really, again, he's just a symptom. Believe me, if you think Donald Sterling is the only guy in the NBA that thinks like that, then I got some land to sell you. You know, if you think Donald Sterling, and they don't all think like that, I understand that, but he is not the only one. You know, he just got caught. And it's almost like the way they have vilified him with full knowledge that he's not the only person who thinks like that. He just got caught saying it, then, you know, the implication is that it's all right to think that way, and it's all right to act that way. Just don't tell nobody that's how you think, because they're acting like that every day. I mean, Kevin Johnson got up and talked about, you know, what the players are demanding and how offended they are about being called a nigger. Well, they treating him like a nigger in Sacramento. Kevin Johnson is the mayor, and Turner Construction and the Kings are treating him like a nigger because they building that stadium, and they don't care they ain't got no black folk on that stadium. And, you know, and they brought the same team to Sacramento to build the arena for the Kings that they had in Santa Clara to build a $2 billion arena for the San Francisco 49ers with less than 1%.
49ers, okay.
Yeah. So what's worse, calling somebody a nigger or treating them like a nigger? You can call me a nigger all day long as you give me equal opportunity. I don't care what you call me, because, you know, sticks and stones, we learned them when we was little. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. So I ain't even worried about you calling me. I wouldn't even pay no attention to it. But yeah, boys, that's really the key. They're tracking our boys. They're pushing them into this sports, and the few who get there are not really equipped like they could to take advantage of it. They discourage them from doing business with or anyhow associating with people. I mean, who did they just put in charge of the Clippers? Okay, Richard Parsons. Okay, they don't even know, they ain't never heard of Richard Parsons. But it's wonderful that they did, because he one of the baddest brothers to walk the planet, Dick Parsons. But I bet you ain't none of them Clippers ever heard of him. They don't even, and worse than that, they probably won't even, I guess they can now, it's so easy to do. You could just Google him, right, and say, this man ran American Express, he ran Citicorp, a black man. So,
oh, okay.
That's something wonderful to come out of it. He's the interim CEO of the Clippers, Richard Parsons, one of the most prolific managers in corporate America in the history. He's just doing it, you know, on an interim basis until they, I mean, he's made enough money and done enough stuff. He ain't trying to run no basketball team. But I found it interesting that they picked him. And interesting because what they have done is put before these players an example of black success that many of them have never, ever seen. I mean, he's smarter than anybody in the NBA. Dick Parsons is. So it's wonderful that they're exposing, but I just wonder how many of the players will take advantage of the fact that they are that close to Dick Parsons. How many of them going to Google him to find out who he really is and what he has really done? And how many of them will stay in touch with him after his interim deal ends and then he go back to New York? I mean, he's the kind of guy that you're supposed to be connected with forever with what he has done.
Okay. Well, sounds like you got a whole lot of things on your plate, and definitely sounds like the upcoming boss conference. And did you have a date on that yet?
June 28th through August. It's going to be a two-week program, August 8th, again, at the Historic Challengers Boys and Girls Club. And then it's coming to a city near you for whoever's on the phone. Our plans are to go to Atlanta, Miami, Dallas, Cleveland. Milwaukee may get in there real quick because of some relationships we've made in Milwaukee. But the program is going to be taken national. And again, in 5 years, imagine, we'll have a class of college kids, and then we'll have high school seniors and juniors and sophomores and freshmen. And again, we're going to be providing them with information and resources. We're going to improve the graduation rate, which now for black kids is about 40%. We're going to improve that. We're going to improve the life success, which is a natural consequence of more than 40% of them graduating.
Yeah, well, on that graduation rate, and that's something I will talk about later on in another show, but I got another number that I want to share with you later on that I came across. But that's still an interesting piece that we need to keep on the front burner as far as our young men, whether or not they're graduating and what they're doing with their life.
Well, we actually are starting a research project to find out what happens to the 99% who don't go pro. Where do they wind up at? I mean, Mike's teammates at UVA who are not in the league, what are they doing?
Exactly.
Yeah. And we want to go back about 5 years.
That's definitely a good piece of information to tap into. Hey, we're going to take a break.
Did you come up with
a
higher number of graduation? I'm just curious. Do you have a higher graduation success rate number?
Are we talking about high school or are we talking about college kids?
We're talking about college, yeah.
Okay. No. I was thinking on the lines of high school.
Oh, yeah. No. They're going to graduate from high school, but on average, only about 35 to 40% of them are going to graduate from college.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come right back to you, Everett. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Uh-huh.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back to you.
Okay.
All right, we've been talking with Mr. Everett Glenn from the National Sports Authority. And Everett has had the National Sports Authority up in focus, and things been going on with that for better part of, I believe, he'll correct me here in a minute, close to about 2 to 3 years now.
2 years, we've been actually with our 501c3 and all that kind of stuff, 2 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago.
Huh?
No, I was just saying that was 2 years ago. But we're going to take a quick break and come right back to you.
Okay. You want me to stay on the line, though, right?
Stay on the line.
Okay.
The game had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know what would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then be ball would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hate then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching, I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart moves. That's how I do.
He said he's making smart cool. He's making smart cool. Again, that's my man, Mr. Keith Wright. Keith Wright, recent graduate of the University of Harvard. Yes, I dare say University of Harvard. The young man up there played a great game of basketball during the time that he was at Harvard and now has moved on to bigger and better things in life, bigger and better things in life. We have been talking to, for about the last half hour or so, to Mr. Everett Glenn, CEO and founder of the National Sports Authority. And as you listened on, you noticed that Everett has his hands in quite a few different things. But more importantly, he's making sure that our young men get the best out of their situation, as they play sports in this over $300 billion industry. We're going to go back to Everett in a few minutes. I see we have a few other callers that's on the line. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can always give us a call at 917-889-8095. I'll say that number again, 917-889-8095. We're going back to Everett here in a few minutes. And, again, I said, if you have anything that you want to share with us in our conversation, please join in on us. Everett, you still on the line?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Who was the guy with that song that just came on?
That was Keith Wright.
Keith Wright?
Keith Wright. Used to play at Harvard.
Yeah, that's a wonderful song, man. That might be our theme song.
Actually, I asked him to make me a little something, put together a little piece, and he put that piece together for me probably in about a couple of days.
Okay.
So, he it's nothing special. He just put something together, and I've been using it ever since. But I see we have a few other callers on the line. I don't know if they want to chime in on the conversation or have any questions for us. Let me check and see what they want to do here. Good evening, caller. You're on with the Parents Coach and Parents Network, area code 703. Who am I speaking with?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I sure can.
Oh, this is Lynette Wright.
Hey, Lynette, how are you?
Hey, sister, how are you?
Good. I'm well. I thought my voice wasn't activated. I was using the Facebook.
That's a great thing.
Yeah. My question is this. I have two. I have one comment. Perhaps the league needs to be properly introduced to Richard Parsons. Maybe we should, think about sending out a handbill to each of the players to let them understand his credentials and the reason why they should stay connected to Richard Parsons. A lot of the players may not have an idea how powerful a man he is.
That's the point exactly, Lynette. They should. I mean, just the fact that he's a black man, they had a picture of him, in the paper. Okay, and so if I'm on a team and they are appointing a black man to run the team, then just on general principle, I should want to know, who is this guy? I mean, it's almost like a story that a guy told me, a brother who I know very well. He just retired from Procter & Gamble, and he was the general counsel for Procter & Gamble. Now, for those who know, Procter & Gamble is probably one of the five largest companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Steve Jemison was the general counsel for Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
For all of Procter & Gamble. He wasn't the local guy. He wasn't the regional. He was the general counsel, a black man. And he lived in Cincinnati, which is where Procter & Gamble is headquartered. And he lived in this exclusive, spot. And Andre, I can't think of Andre's last name now, the big tackle, came out of Alabama a couple years ago. first-round pick of the Bengals. Now, and he moved into this spot where Steve Jemison lives, right?
Okay.
And he would see Steve Jemison on a regular basis because Steve lived in this place, right? Now, you can't live in this place unless you got something going on, right?
Right.
But you know, this kid, Steve told me this kid never asked him who he was. Never even asked him
who
he was. He never even asked him who he was.
Because he didn't, yeah, I understand.
I'm saying, how can you see a black man, now you know, I mean, and Steve at the time that he saw him, which was a few years ago when he came into the league, Steve then was like 58 years old. So he wasn't no young guy, so, you know, he ain't no rapper or, you know.
Right.
And you ain't seen him on no movies or nothing. So how can you see a guy in a spot as exclusive as where you live in it, and you don't even say, what's your name, man?
Oh, I see another brother. Well, maybe the end result needs to be looked at first.
If Steve was a girl.
Oh, yeah, he was ass.
Then on the first time he saw him.
He was an ass. That's right.
That's right.
That's
why we got to go back.
And oftentimes our young ladies as well aren't conditioned to make that approach.
You're 200%. You're 200% correct. That's why Boss. We need Boss. And that's why I'm saying 5 years from now, when our first class goes to the league, they don't know who all these guys are even before they go.
Good.
And they will know. You know, if they come across somebody that they need to introduce themselves. You know, my name is, and they need to have an elevator speech.
But right now,
they're not even training them to do that. It's not important,
That's a big...
Go ahead, Lynette.
That's going across the nation, teaching young black people the elevator speech. And on top of that, stop isolating each other from each other. Don't be afraid to talk to one another when you see each other, because we are too far and few between.
Yes.
And
this kid that we just talked about earlier, I don't know if he was on the phone, but we just talked about this kid, Chandler Jones, who just handled his own situation between the time his career ended at San Jose State up and through the draft yesterday, and now he's in Cleveland. And so I've reached out to a few people in Cleveland that I know, and one of them has already responded, Dominic Ozan. Now, Dominic Ozan, his dad owned, and now Dominic owns, the oldest and largest and most successful construction firm in Ohio.
Yeah.
Ozan Construction. Okay. Now, this kid, Ozan Construction, O-Z-A-N-E. Ozan Construction. You can Google it. They helped build the Cleveland Stadium that he's going to play in.
Okay.
And now, he ain't even, their first practice minicamp is tomorrow. And already he's been connected to what many people would think is, one of the most powerful guys in Cleveland based on his business success, Dominic Ozan. Dominic Ozan, I just reached out to him and said, look, we want to connect Chandler and his new friends with some accomplished and committed folk. Can we count you in? His response was, yes, gladly. Okay, so we're going to connect this kid. But that's not what happens when they show up. I mean, Mike's son, Mike Jr., we did a thing. Mike had played, 8 or 10 games with the Hawks. During his first year. And we had an event at the Green Room in Atlanta, and we brought, the mayor sent a representative, Julian Bond's son, who is a council person, was there. We had Cheryl McAfee of McAfee 3, one of the biggest architectural firms, black in the whole country. They did the Atlanta airport, and they did the Olympics, all the Olympic properties when they had the Olympics in Atlanta. And, mm-hmm. I mean, all them kind of folk. And he hadn't even, you know, again, he played 8 or 9 games with the Hawks. Him and his teammate, Tolliver. I guess Tolliver's not with the Hawks now.
No, he's with Charlotte Bobcats.
Yeah, but, I mean, so that's what we got to do. But, again, we can't start it when they get to the league, because when you start, when they get to the league, then you have to convince them that it's worth it, because now, you know, the kid is making $400,000+, right? And, and that's more than most people make, black or white.
Right.
And so they don't see the importance. I make as much money, if not more, than all of these people, so how can they help me, right?
Exactly.
Well, but them people that we're going to introduce you to, they've been making that kind of money for 20 years. And they're going to keep making it because they don't make the money with their body. Okay, but you got to put him in that situation. Now, when he got there, because Mike had to convince little Mike to go. He didn't want to go. But when he got there, he was like, oh, my God, man, look. And he's the star of the show, because even though these other folk got more stuff going on, he's an NBA player. And they just want to, you know, get close. And so, you know, the deal is to do like Clark Kellogg, who was selling insurance when he was 18, you know. I talk basketball with him. I turn the conversation to insurance. I sell a policy, and then we both go home happy.
Right.
But you got to keep putting them in this
situation. Hold on a second, folks. We got another caller that just joined us. I want to see if that caller want to join in on the conversation. Good evening. Welcome to the Parents Coaching Parents Network, area code 682. You want to join in on the conversation? Hello? Area code 682. Well, I guess they must be shy and didn't want to join in on the conversation because they had their hand up.
All right, go ahead.
Amanda Weber was... Lynette, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Yes.
I know you said two questions.
One more concern. Talking about the collective wealth building strategies. How can we make the collective wealth building strategies favorable to the NBA players to encourage them to help build black infrastructure?
Well, we have to get them before they become NBA players, because, again, as we talked about earlier, the system is such today that a kid who has talent is basically kidnapped, for lack of a better word. Okay, and so by the time he gets to the NBA, if you figure if a guy, you know, by the time he's in the 9th grade and all through high school and then through college, he's got these benefactors. He's got these folk who he thinks care about him. All the people in power positions that he sees, from the athletic director on down, none of them look like him. Then most of them, and it's not, you know, I don't think you can blame the player, because he's just a product of the system. It would happen to anybody who was indoctrinated the way they indoctrinate these guys. They would come to believe that they can only associate with, I mean, because even John Johnson, for example, John Johnson, Ebony Johnson Publications, he said once that he would not associate with anybody who didn't make more money than him.
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
I heard that.
Now, he's the richest black man in the country.
Oh, yeah.
So he basically said, he ain't associating with no other black folks. Now, we can bash magazine. but he ain't going, because that's how he made his money, selling his magazine to black people. But he said he wasn't going to associate with nobody who didn't make more money than him. Now, by analogy, that's what these players, consciously or subconsciously, they believe everybody is trying to get their money.
Yes, that's true.
Not that nobody's trying to help them, because they don't know black people who are successful. Generally, they don't know. I mean, and even if they read about somebody or they see something on the news, they don't know the person. So they can't even fathom how Dick Parsons could run American Express or Citicorp.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know how that could happen.
Right, they don't. Well,
and they don't think he's as qualified as
yes.
some other man running some other company.
Yes. So
we have to start early,
yes,
and we have
yes.
to expose them to as much success as possible in
mm-hmm.
the form of people look like them, so that when they meet people later, the first thing that they think is not, you know, what is this guy trying to get from me?
Right. What about a Black Wall Street directory?
Oh, I mean, that kind of stuff almost exists now, because there's black organizations for everything. And so, I mean, like, they get the, you know, the black accountants, the National Black MBA Association, and the National Black Journal. So we get all these organizations, but even if we expose the kids to them, their first call after you talk to them is going to be to their agent.
Well,
and the agent's gonna say,
yeah.
"Well, no, so no, you don't need to be bothered with them guys, man. They're just trying to get something from you, or whatever." So we can tell them about them. Oh, there's a guy I just went to a party. What is his name? He's at Morgan Stanley. Ted Reed. Ted Reed, one of the baddest brothers on Wall Street, and he works for Morgan Stanley. But again, despite all of the success that he's had, he's still a black man in the eyes of these kids.
Yes,
and one thing that I talked about, and I kind of sort of put the bullet out at the beginning of the show. That's one of the things that we, as parents, have had that exposure, and you, Everett, that has been involved since you know, early on with a lot of these young men and women. We got to start educating these kids at a much earlier age than high school, you know, so their mindset is getting there. And they're starting to formulate some things and realizing that these people are the same people that they seen walking down the street, or the same people that they see, you know, on TV or whatever. So if we can get these kids educated, and well, the education is going to have to start with the parents. The mindset of the parents have to change.
That's right. And Mike is an example. He practices what he preaches, because we met 5 years ago at the Power Networking Conference. And Mike brought his son, who was now in the NBA, who was a junior, I think, or a sophomore at Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike put him in the car and drove him to Atlanta to the Power Networking Conference. And he met Miles Monroe and Les Brown. I don't even think he knew these guys he was meeting, who they were.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But he was there.
Exactly. You know, it's funny that you say that we first ran into Les down in the lobby. Les had just got in, and he still had his stuff with him. He had just got in, came in, and ran into the restaurant, the little restaurant that was downstairs, and then we was all standing around the lobby. And I walked up and spoke to Les and introduced myself, and Mike came over and shook his hand, and Mike looked at him like, okay, who is this guy? You know?
Yeah.
And then later on, I forced him to look something up about him and find out who he is, and, you know, how long he's been around and what he's been doing. So it was truly a learning experience for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about you're talking about these black male empowerment seminars, basically helping our brothers come together for breakout sessions to understand what's available in the industry in the event they don't get to play basketball. They could be agents, or they could learn how to work within an infrastructure to be helpful to the black community as a whole.
Lynette, we just have to get them there. There was a kid last year. He played for TCU, and he got drafted by the Chicago Bears, and he met Greg Williams in the airport. His name is Greg McCoy. And he's a kid. Where's Greg? I forget. Greg is from Dallas. Okay. And he had just come from some rookie symposium that they have for all NFL players, for the new players, right? and he was on his way back to Dallas, and the symposium was outside of Cleveland. So he was in Cleveland Airport, and Greg Williams, George Frazier's partner, they was flying on the same plane. And Greg, you know, he knows what I do. And, you know, he saw the kid, and, you know, he looked like a player. He might have had some gear on or something. And so Greg struck up a conversation with this kid, Greg Williams, did with Greg McCoy. And before they get to Dallas on the airplane, Greg had invited him to the Power Networking Conference.
What's the name of this Power Networking Conference?
Power Networking Conference. This is the 12th or 13th year now. It started out in Cleveland, which is where Greg and George are headquartered, and then for 5 years it was in Atlanta. And this is the third year in Dallas. And they bring in, you know, Yvonne Van Zandt and, you know, Les Brown. This is a who are black folk.
See, this is where we are isolated, because we could be piggybacking off of the Essence Music Festival, because they have so many breakout sessions. Y'all could get in there and be contracted to work that same empowerment seminar within the confines.
Well,
this is a
3-day deal in Dallas. This is a 3-day. So, I mean, if anybody on this call wants to come, all they have to do is let me know. If you want to come, if you want your daughter to come.
Yeah, I would love to come.
But that's all you got to let me know. Let me know, and it's done.
Yeah,
in fact,
come
this year because they're giving me a lifetime award.
Oh, that's good. But what I'm saying is...
But the point I want to make about this kid, Greg McCoy, who came to the Power Networking Conference. So Greg, you know, just invited him, right? Greg didn't know if he was going to show. Greg put him on the phone with me while he was in Cleveland, and I basically told him, look, man, you know, if you're serious, then, you know, meet me at the Power Never Conference. I'll be there, you know, tomorrow, you know. I ain't really got a whole bunch to talk about. If you're serious, just show up, because you ain't got nothing to do. Just show up. So the kid came.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he came, and in about 15 minutes, I introduced him to the president of the National Black MBA, a sister who was a senior vice president with the Nielsen rating agency, the Nielsen company. All these people was right in Chicago. He'd just been drafted to Chicago, and he's in Dallas, and he's meeting all these people who are in Chicago but who are in Dallas for the conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
He stayed. This boy stayed all day. He stayed till they closed down the conference for Thursday. And on Friday, he came back with two of his friends.
So wonderful.
And he stayed all day Friday. And then he came back Saturday. And he stayed all day Saturday. And then he stayed and partied with us, because we close it out every year with an all-white party. He came back for that. He said this, he ain't never seen nothing like this in his life. He said that after the first day. So you're absolutely right, Lynn. It will change the lines, but we got to get them there. They don't want to come.
It just happened
that Greg met this kid at the airport, and, you know, Greg is the kind of guy, I mean, he's low-key, you know, he's not threatening. It was clear he wasn't trying to be the guy's agent or he wasn't trying to represent him or nothing. He just said, man, look, we got some help for you, man, and you really need to come. If you ain't doing nothing, you need to stop by. At least and check it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get rid of him.
Yes.
For 3 days. I mean, couldn't get
I need to chime in here, folks, because we're coming up on that witching hour, and it's about time for us to wind down. But, you know, definitely we – thank you for calling in, Everett, and sharing, as always, your insight and your wisdom on what's going on out there in the world of sports and that sports industry as far as our young folks are concerned. And definitely thank our surprise guest, Miss Lynette Wright, who didn't introduce herself when she first came on the call. But that's all right. We know who you were anyway. And thank you for joining us. Everett, give us some information on how we can get in touch with you and keep track of what's going on with the National Sports Authority.
Well, you can always reach me at 562-619-8460, 562-619-8460. And our website is thensa.org. thenSA.org. You can also reach us at nationalsportsauthority.org. Either one.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have anything to close out, Lynette?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, and I just wanted to just continue to be hopeful that our community can get collective and Everett is successful. And thank you, Mike, for your...
Well, I don't want me to be... I want us to be successful, because if I'm successful, that means all of us are successful.
Yes, well stated. I totally agree. Thank you, Mike, Scott, for all your collaboration and your helping us to stay connected.
Yes, ma'am. No problem. I appreciate you. All right, folks, you've been listening to the Parents Coaching Parents Network. We've had Attorney Everett Glenn on with us, and we also had a caller call in and shared some information with us and had a few valuable questions. But, you know, keep tuning in. We'll be posting our information and letting you know next time we'll be on the air. We'll be on again next Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, next Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I think we'll actually make that our standard time for bringing it live to you here on the air, here on the Parents Coaching Parents Network. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at PCP Network. Or check us out on Instagram at the PCP Network as well. As always, we're going to close out with my man, Mr. Keith Wright. I think that was the most fitting song, and we're going to always have to close out with Keith. Where you at, Keith?
Student of the game, had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-ball would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in. Meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Yeah,
I'm
the Parents Network. Have a great evening.